You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Rendell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
This is not a drill, people. This is what we've been training for. There is new Star Trek on the horizon, and I'm not talking about the Abrams movie. I'm talking about new Star Trek in television form, but not on the TV.
Can I just say one thing before we proceed?
Yes.
Oh my god, she said it!
Yeah. Ah, yes, this is a beautiful, glorious moment and good time to be a Star Trek fan. Now, back to what you were saying. It's not exactly on TV. There's a little more to it. So do you want to explain that for those who just, for whatever ungodly reason, when this drops on Thursday and we're recording it Monday... why you have not heard of this, but go ahead, tell them.
Yeah, if you guys have been on an internet shutout, but yet are graceful enough to download our podcast, then here's the information. Coming January of 2017, CBS is producing an all-new Star Trek TV show that's going to have a special preview broadcast on the network, CBS, as in during primetime. You'll be able to watch the first couple of episodes, but then they're going to migrate over into the network's digital subscription video on demand service. It's called CBS All Access, and it's kind of like CBS answer to Netflix, but nowhere near as cool.
Right, because it's just CBS programming, and at the moment, it's just the same stuff that you could watch on TV. Only you can watch it streaming, too, if you want to.
Yeah, that's the thing is that... Oh, and before we get into the pros and cons of CBS All Access, the executive producer is going to be Alex Kurtzman.
That should be a familiar name.
That's a familiar name because he produced and wrote the previous Star Trek films and with his partner Roberto Orci. Now, there's a lot of contention and negativity surrounding specifically Roberto Orci, but regardless of how you feel, he is not going to be involved with this project. I personally see that as a positive. I'm tired of Roberto Orci. I wish him the best of luck in other endeavors, but I want him to leave Star Trek alone. And
okay, so be it.
That is my personal opinion. 100% personal opinion. So I'm looking forward to Alex Kurtzman. He's currently looking for writers right now. And they're doing the streaming model, which has been proven so successful for Netflix and Amazon shows.
Yep, and Hulu.
And Hulu. We have no idea if this is going to be the House of Cards model where they drop a season all on one day or if they're going to release it once a week like the old network standards. We don't know.
We don't, but I have a guess. And I think it has to do entirely with money. They're going to release it one a week for probably 3 months so that they get 3 months worth of $5.99 subscriptions out of us. And even if we cancel after that, they've at least got our money for Star Trek.
I think you're right. That's where I'm leaning. I think it's a smart business decision. And also CBS, I mean, they're not exactly blazing the trails here with streaming shows. They're just kind of dipping their toes into the water. They've had, like Netflix, you know, came out of nowhere. Hulu kind of came out of nowhere. And Amazon, you know, like had a whole bunch of profits, but then went into streaming. CBS has been around for a very long time. And those are a lot of habits to break.
It is, indeed. And stop me if I'm wrong, but I think it's one of the only big networks that has any kind of streaming, at least on its own. I know NBC shows and ABC shows are streamed to Hulu.
No, well, I mean, here's the thing, is that in all the major networks have streaming apps and capabilities.
You can
get Fox, NBC, ABC... PBS, you can get all these networks through some sort of app, whether it's on Roku or Apple TV or Amazon or anything like that. They all have it. But CBS, I think, is going to be the first old major network that produces its own content exclusively for their streaming service.
Okay. So that's kind of the edge.
I think so. Here's the thing is that a lot of people, and we'll get into the pros and cons portion of the CBS All Access. A lot of people see this as a con because people are screaming, why on earth do I have to be behind a paywall? Why can't I just turn on my TV and watch it? You know, like, why do I have to have another subscription service? Why can't it be on Hulu? Why can't it be on Netflix? Why can't it be on Amazon Prime? Well, the matter of the fact is that CBS doesn't have partnership with any of these companies, not in a strong way, some in a little bit of way. But if you look at CBS, they have the most strict and stringent digital rights I've ever seen. Like, you will not see The Big Bang Theory on Netflix. You will not see, like, they just now got CSI on Netflix, and you won't see any of the new, like, any of the currently airing shows on Hulu. And it's just they want their own brand in their own pocket, and there's no way that they're going to break those rules just for Star Trek. But one way that you could see this as a positive, because some people are saying, oh, they don't have any faith in Star Trek to put it on TV, so they're just putting it behind their subscription service. Well, they have enough faith to make it their flagship show for this service.
Right, because this is kind of an experiment for them. Right now, they don't have any exclusively streaming content for the CBS All Access. Mm-hmm. Star Trek is going to lead that, and if it's successful, we'll probably see more content come down the road. And in the meantime, who knows? I'm sure they've got a plan set in place. It's just we're working off of such little information that, you know, we're so far off from any details. I really don't want to have too many opinions right off the get-go with such bare details. You know what I mean?
We're going
to learn so much more in the months to come. I don't want to make any judgments at all yet. I'm very cautiously optimistic about this whole thing, just like I am with the movies. I want to go into it with a good attitude. I want it to blow me away, but I'm not going to go in with a high bar just in case I'm disappointed.
I'm going in head first with this. I have high hopes. I think it's going to be great. I want to be great. I am energetic. I'm excited. I think this is what we've all been screaming for 10 years.
Yes. And we finally got it, guys.
And so many of us are saying, hey, streaming would be a great option for Star Trek. And we all said, like, oh, that would be a lot of fun. And then we get it in a streaming form, and people are like, oh, why is it streaming? Why can't I just turn on my TV?
It's just because it's another subscription platform. But I think Mike Schindler was the first person I saw who broke it down. And it's something like, you know, per episode, it breaks down to the same amount you would pay for any other episode, whether it's on iTunes or on Amazon Prime or what have you. Okay, so you can't watch it on your TV on air after the premiere episode. Yeah, I kind of get why that sucks, but at the same time, I'm willing to embrace this. Shut up and take my money. It's one less going out and getting a burger, one less coffee.
Yeah.
It's pretty cheap, you guys. And it's Star Trek. It's brand new freaking Star Trek.
Now, I don't know if, I don't know if Mike did this too, but I remember you and I had that conversation where I broke down the cost. We're actually saving money, like, compared to iTunes. Like, because if you want an HD iTunes episode, that's $2.99 per episode. So if we if we get four episodes a month, if they do the one a week standard model, so if we get four episodes a month, that's $12 a month via iTunes for Star Trek.
Well, there you go then. And I don't think Mike broke it down quite the same way.
CBS All Access gives us half that price. So for cord cutters and a younger generation and people who are in the digital realm, this will actually save you money.
Truth. And if you have to suck it up and wait for it to go to, I don't know, say Netflix eventually does go there, or to Amazon, or wherever it will eventually go down in the pipeline.
Or DVD.
Blu-ray, baby. Buy the seasons on Blu-ray. There's still plenty of us who I think would still do that because we want that plus extras. And you know how much of a junkie I am for extras. And so I want it all already. They're going to be able to market this. They're going to make money. It's still a good value. It really is.
And we have no idea if it's going to be in the Abrams verse. We have no idea if it's going to be Prime. We have no idea if it's going to be completely separate. I mean, there's a good chance because it's Alex Kurtzman is behind it. So it's a good chance it's going to be in the Abrams verse because the guy created the Abrams verse.
But not necessarily.
But, I mean, we don't know. That's the thing. We don't know. I mean, there's good money on Abramsverse. I'd be fine with Abramsverse as long as it's not TOS. I'm kind of tired with TOS. Let's move on from TOS.
I think anything is possible, quite honestly. And I'm excited by that. And we're going to learn little bits throughout. We have got a long wait ahead of us. And so I'm glad we're going to be able to space it out. At least, well, I hope we'll be able to space it out. I don't want to know everything. So, yeah, this is very exciting news as we're recording this in 2015. And I can't wait to look back on this, say, a year from now. Mm-hmm. After we've seen the movie and we're really gearing up for the TV series after that. And I'm no doubt we're going to know a lot more than we know now. And just how exciting this was and how new and how just how unknown it was.
There's so many possibilities, and that is why I'm excited.
There are always possibilities.
Always. All right. Okay, so let's get into the show.
Yeah, we got to start the show. We're talking Voyager.
Yeah, we're talking Voyager, and what we're doing today is we're comparing two episodes, one from TNG, one from Voyager. I love doing this because I love going outside of Voyager. As much as I love Voyager itself, it's nice to visit other places.
Well, we like all of Star Trek, and so when we can go over to the territory of other podcasts, not to tread on them, but just to knock and visit for a little while, it is fun. And so A Matter of Perspective, if you don't remember, was a season 3 TNG episode where Riker was convicted of a murder. The attitude of the society is that you're guilty until proven innocent, and essentially the episode is proving Riker's innocence via recreations of scenarios on the holodeck.
Now, he was suspected of murder. He was not convicted.
Really? See, I thought he was just, okay, you're guilty. You did it.
What? Well, convicted would mean, like, okay, you know, charged and, like, you're guilty.
Oh, sentence. Well, they were that close to doing that, I suppose. They maybe hadn't gotten quite that far. Wrong terminology.
Semantics.
Yeah, I know. Details.
So, and the one that we're comparing it to is Season 1, Episode 8, Ex Post Facto. It's one where Tom Paris is convicted of murder. He is actually convicted and sentenced.
Yeah, he was convicted.
He denies having committed the crime, even though the images extracted from the victim's own memory seem to prove his guilt. So his sentence is every 14 hours to relive his victim's death through the victim's eyes over and over and over again until he is dead.
And you know what? That is one heck of a form of justice. I have to say that.
That's pretty messed up.
It is, but if you are messed up enough to commit a crime, that's a messed up equal punishment, don't you think?
Well, I mean, unless you're a sociopath and we're like, there's so many times that they have murderers who are so twisted and bent in the head that they get pleasure from their killing that they would be like, oh, sweet, I get my whole movies over and over again.
That's true. That would not work on sociopaths, would it? Well, maybe they don't have the same level of mental illness that humans do. And I'd like to think by the 24th century, mental illness is more or less gone, or at least very well dealt with and managed.
That'd be nice. But so as you can tell from these two episodes, we have a hotshot flyboy who is suspected of a murder. And there's a saucy wife in the mix. And the crew of their respective ships come in to save them. So obviously there's a lot of parallels here. One was in 1990, the other in 1995. So not a lot of time in between them.
Not really. And seriously, I think honestly they took the script for A Matter of Perspective and then just recycled it into Ex Post Facto and tried to give it that film noir twist with the black and white recollections. I mean, they wanted to go more for that, and then the budget ran out, and LeVar Burton, who directed it, was really disappointed by the result because it just did not come through as intended.
Now, with this one, we can handle this a couple of different ways. I mean, it's pretty key. Like, we hate to go through an entire episode description, but with our comparisons, it's kind of key to go down it. So with A Matter of Perspective, what happens is that, you know, the Enterprise crew is sent to investigate the findings of a scientist. Like, he's going to create it's Dr. Nell Apgar, and he's trying to create Krieger waves, and it's blah-diddy, 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 blah.
Science.
And science. And so they're on a space station, LaForge and Riker are there. They come back. Well, LaForge comes back first, and Riker's like, okay, I'm ready to leave. And as soon as Riker beams back...
No, wait. He's ready to leave now.
Ready to leave now. Love it. And, like, so he's clearly pissed. He leaves, but then as soon as Riker gets back, they have a little problem in transport, and the space station blows up.
Boom!
And so there's an investigation, and the governing body over the space station and whatnot is investigating... Dr. Nell Epgar's death, and his wife says, like, oh, Riker totally tried to rape me, and he tried to kill my husband, and, Riker's totally pissed about it, and so, you know, why don't you investigate him? And so all this investigation went down, and Riker's like, I totally didn't try to sexually assault this girl, and the wife's like, totally you did! And, like, you were pissed at my husband. And they're like, no, your husband was pissed at me. So it was a lot of stories going back and forth. And it's really cool because the reason why it's called Matter of Perspective is because they recreated in the holodeck what each person says.
Right. It's he said versus what she said.
This is like a stenographer's dream, all right? So this is, like, we get to see what happens, through their story. So, like, we get to see Riker's perspective, the widow's perspective, and the doctor's perspective through. And you're saying, like, hey, how does that work with the doctor's dead? Apparently, hearsay is permissible in this court. And it was the doctor's assistant's. It's, like, the doctor talked to his assistant, and the assistant gave the testimony on behalf of the doctor. And it was three similar but very different stories. Like, Riker's... You know, he was the hero. He would never hit on a married woman, and he never hit the doctor, and he would never ruffle any feathers, and he got away, and the doctor was just a jerk. In the wife's story, Will was this smarmy ladies' man who only had his mind on one thing, who hit her husband, like, physically, and was just horrible to him, and said, like, you're gonna regret, you know, reporting me for hitting on your wife, and on the verge of sexually assaulting her. And then we have the doctor's perspective via the assistant, where the doctor's like just this manly man who hit Riker across the face for trying to hit on his wife, and his wife is this absolute paragon of virtue who would never never let Riker hit on her. In all stories but Riker's, Riker is this killer, and they go through it, and Geordi and Data use their science to figure out the problem.
The power of science.
The power of
the holodeck, because ultimately what proves Riker's innocence is that the holodeck recreated the simulation of the lab so accurately that mm-hmm. they were able to pinpoint that it was Dr. Apgar's Krieger waves that caused the explosion that killed him.
Well, what happened was is that the doc tried to create, like, as soon as Will Riker tried to beam out, the doc created a Krieger wave to kill Will Riker. But yet it hit Will Riker's beam and then bounced and hit the reactor, exploding the ship. So Apgar, trying to kill Riker, ended up killing himself. And that's why it looked like a phaser beam was coming directly from Riker, because it bounced off of him.
Boom.
Thus his innocence.
Yeah. So bravo to the holodeck.
Bravo to the holodeck. Bravo to science!
Yes, for coming to the truth.
All right, I know I've been talking for a long time, but with ex post facto, this one changes up the formula just a little bit, because we have one story, we have one perspective, and that's the only one that matters, and we have this video. You know, they were able to get the perspective from the dead person's mind, and then, you know, that's your evidence right there. So as far as they're concerned, Tom is guilty. He was convicted, he was sentenced before Harry could leave, go find his ship, get his crewmates back to help him.
Yeah, pretty convincing.
It was pretty convincing because, like, through the dead man's eyes, we see Tom flirting and in cahoots with his wife, and then, boom, he shoves a knife into the guy's side, and then he drops dead. And so they implant this into Tom's brain, but the thing is, he's a human. His anatomy is different, and so his brain can't handle this implantation. So he's getting mind-blowing headaches, and he just can't handle it. He starts passing out. And so the doctor is like, we need to figure out a way to remove this as soon as possible, or he's going to die. So they up the stakes.
It's causing neural damage, too. So eventually he's going to be just gone.
Yeah. And the wife gave eyewitness testimony saying, yeah, Tom totally killed my husband, like right in front of me, too. And Tom's like, she's a liar. But he did not deny spending time with her.
Yes. Well, remember, this is season one Tom Paris, where he's still playing around a little bit. And I just want to interject one thing. The reputations of both Riker and Tom Paris work against them in this episode, because we know that Riker likes the ladies, and if a lady is essentially throwing herself on him, as some of the recollections state, that is not something he would pass up necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Nor would Tom Paris. Although Tom really did, and with Riker, probably not.
Yeah, the producers knew exactly what they were doing when they chose the characters to be the protagonists.
Exactly. You couldn't get Harry to do this. You wouldn't have Tuvok doing this. No, they chose correctly. They did well there.
Now, what differs is, in matter of perspective, the person accused, Riker, was the protagonist of the episode. But with this one, Tom is accused. But Tuvok is kind of more of the protagonist in this episode, because it's Tuvok's job to investigate.
Right. And he's playing detective, and he's got to come down to the bottom of this.
He's playing detective, and he's doing it well. He talks to the wife. He talks to the officials. He talks to everybody involved. The wife has a dog, and it's one of those annoying little yip dogs. And like the dog sees Tuvok for the first time and just freaking loses his mind. And the wife goes, oh, you know, the dog doesn't like new people. You know, he or she, I can't remember the gender, always freaks out whenever there's new people. And, you know, like Tuvok's like, strokes his chin, you know, like does his
interesting.
Voice. Interesting. So he does this. It doesn't really matter, but Tuvok learns more and more details and then figures out that this all was a scheme to steal the dead doctor's weapon secrets. And so how he found that out was he mind melded with Tom in order to see what Tom would see. And he noticed that there was characters on the bottom of his vision. And Tom just thought that was a part of the vision, part of the process. But it turns out that was an embedded code that another set of people were going to steal Tom so that they could extract those numbers from his head and get those weapon secrets. So another doctor and the wife were in cahoots to blame Tom so that these other people could kidnap him, steal the weapon secrets, and they could get away scot-free. But what happened was that Tom was a great deal taller than the dead doc, and the killer was the same height. The killer knew this race's anatomy. There was no way in hell Tom would know this race's anatomy. And
right, it would have just been dumb luck.
It just would have been dumb luck. And the real killer was in the house, and the dog totally knew the real killer. And so Tuvok didn't use science. He used good old-fashioned gumshoeery.
Pretty much. He just used logic to determine the truth. And in comparison of these two episodes, you're relying on either the testimony of the holodeck or a dog. Which do you think is more convincing? Because actually, I find the dog's testimony much more straightforward and believable. Because you can't fudge that up. With the holodeck, you could mess with things.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that the holodeck is really just people's testimony. So instead of people describing what happens, we just get to see it. And people's testimony can change. People's memory can change, whether they're trying to lie or not. Colors of cars can change memory. Memory is unreliable.
It is. Studies have proven this.
Yeah, Deanna Troi even said that the lying wife believed that she was right, believed that she was telling the truth, even though she wasn't.
Yeah, and that's just the other thing, is we can be totally inaccurate in our recollection and think it's the absolute freaking truth and not know any different.
And a dog has no bias. You know, like a dog has proven habits that you can rely on. But that wasn't the crux of his testimony. There was a lot of other things to go into it. And so now that we have gone into a lengthy process of talking about the order of these events, so which one did you, what worked for you in matter of perspective and what didn't work for you in a matter of perspective?
Well, I did find it interesting to get different versions of the same story, hence the title of matter of perspective. I did find that interesting. Although in comparison to Ex Post Facto, the retelling of events, I think, is much better done in Ex Post Facto, where it's more in real time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's happening rather than just watching it most of the time. But even so, because I watched A Matter of Perspective first, I did like just the differentiating or the differentiating stories of the same events and how those are basically working either for or against Riker, usually against.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. And I loved the fact that Geordi and Wesley used, it was Wesley, right?
Yeah, Geordi, Data, Wesley.
Okay. Yeah. So I love the fact that Geordi and Wesley and Data not only worked to help their friend get him out of trouble, but they use science to make it happen. I mean, that is so incredibly TNG. I just can't stand it. It's so great. So that was really cool. That was an interesting way to make things happen, to lead the story to its conclusion. So those were what I thought were the strengths of A Matter of Perspective. How about you?
One big strength for me was having a Riker-centered episode.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Riker. I love his episodes. I love his characterization. I think you can't really go wrong with a Riker episode, in my opinion. And
Shades of Grey.
That's not
sorry.
That doesn't count. That's a clip show.
Oh, that's yeah, whatever.
That's a greatest hits collection. So with that, I feel like I like courtroom drama. This was kind of like a courtroom drama. I love the concept of it, where it's just like, oh, we can go to a magic room and see what the other person is saying is happening. Do I think that's absolutely misleading? Like, if it was in real world application, absolutely. Because just imagine, like, if a jury was sitting in the holodeck and they saw Riker, they saw Will Riker, a three dimensional mm-hmm. Will Riker, try to sexually assault a woman, and then they go, and he goes like, oh, that totally didn't happen. They're like, well, we saw it. Like, on a subconscious level, they saw right. it.
That's actually one thing that did not work for me, because we did not know if the society knew a whole lot about hologram technology and how it worked and all of this. And mm-hmm. they're using that to prove Riker's innocence. And mm-hmm. you would think from their perspective, oh, no, you're totally rigging this crap.
Yeah, it really is a producer and writer's device. Like, it's a storytelling yeah. device, so that we don't get bored just watching someone tell us what happened. We can do a sci-fi edge thing where they're like, holy crap, we actually get to see what happened. So for that, I found it entertaining. Even though I like seeing different perspectives, it got a little repetitive after a while. You know, where it's just
yeah.
kind of like, oh, okay.
I didn't think we needed the third bit of evidence. It wasn't that different. And I don't think she had that much to say or add. And this was the lady who worked with Dr. Apgar, the scientist.
Right.
I don't think we needed that. I felt like that was almost filler to make the episode make length.
I felt that way as well. But this episode did give us one of the greatest Will Riker face palms of all time.
You are right. We did get that. Therefore, it is valuable.
I literally have a magnet of him doing that on my refrigerator right now.
Fantastic. You're going to have to show me this. I mean, I know what it looks like, but I just want to see it on your fridge.
Now, with Ex Post Facto, this one had a very different feel. Like you said, it was very film noir. This was very in the present. It was very much, this is happening now. This is Tuvok mm-hmm. on his investigation, going to planet surface, talking to Tom, having the mind meld, doing things, going and investigating things. And yeah. Matter of Perspective was much more what happened, if yeah. that makes sense.
Yeah, and Ex Post Facto was much more active.
Much more active, much more in the present. And I liked the casting choices in Ex Post Facto. I thought it was...
Oh, did you?
I did. I liked the wife. I liked the doctor. I liked the evil doctor. I liked the weird headdresses that they put on there.
That's one thing I put into my notes, actually, is we've got some interesting aliens of the week going on in both of these episodes. The aliens, in A Matter of Perspective, have really rich hairspray companies, because they have wild out there... massively hairsprayed loopy loops mm-hmm. on their heads. And then in Ex Post Facto, it's sort of like bird kind of designs. Like, they've got feathers on their foreheads.
It's really funny, because the aliens in TNG are very TNG, and the aliens in Voyager are very Voyager aliens.
It's true. Like, if you ever needed to get a stereotype of the alien of the week, these mm-hmm. would be great episodes to reference for each show.
Absolutely. Now, in the same way that you liked that A Matter of Perspective use science, to exonerate the protagonist. I liked that Tuvok used good old-fashioned investigation skills, where it's just like...
Oh, me too.
I like that it was, okay, the guy was a different height, he had more knowledge, you know, like, we found characters in the quote-unquote video, and... And, you know, like, he used the dog. I just thought it was really cool. Like, it felt like an old Jake and the Fat Man. You know, like, it was an old, right. You know, like, Matlock at the end. And I liked that kind of retro feel.
Yeah, it's just a good old-fashioned, cold, hard fact mystery.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that, too. I like it when Tuvok plays detective. I feel like that's actually one of his biggest strengths as a security officer.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we get to see that, I really do appreciate it. That's definitely a big point in Ex Post Facto's favor.
I think that's the thing, is that, like, when I compare the two, with a matter of perspective, that kind of reality only works in Star Trek. You know, like the Krieger waves and the holodeck and the bouncing it through the walls and the radiation. None of that is real. None of that, like, bouncing off of the transporter beam and hitting the reactor, none of that could ever happen today. And with Ex Post Facto, though, all of this could happen today if you just replace the vision with a videotape.
Right. Surveillance.
Surveillance, yeah. And it was manipulated, you know, like, there, you know, like, you get to say it was manipulated video, and, you know, like, the wrong height, the dog, you know, the anatomy, all of this could be explained away today. Like, if you take it out of the sci-fi element, it still works as a mystery. Now, is that a positive or negative? To me, that's a positive.
I think it is a positive, because there's nothing wrong with just good storytelling. And I can't believe I'm even saying that in the context of Ex Post Facto, because it is not by any means a favorite of mine whatsoever. I actually did not like the casting choices for the wife. She just really, the way she delivers some lines really bothers me, and it turns me off and away from the story. But at the same time, comparing these two, A Matter of Perspective and Ex Post Facto, I feel like Ex Post Facto takes what A Matter of Perspective didn't quite get right, simplifies things, like, they distill what's good from A Matter of Perspective, and then they try to add the film noir twist a little bit, but it is better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I like how you put that. Like, it took what worked in A Matter of Perspective and what didn't, separated them, and only used what works, and then simplified it. I think that's absolutely what happened. And I understand why you wouldn't like the actress who played the wife. I really do. Because the reason why I like her is because her delivery is... I feel like she's the only one who knows that she's supposed to be in a film noir episode.
Oh, maybe that is it. Because she has a very different delivery from everybody else. And... Mm-hmm. I can't say I've watched a whole lot of film noir, so I'm just not familiar enough with the style.
Yeah, it's like, even her lines are written for film noir. Like, listen to this. Maybe I kill myself slowly because I don't have the courage to do it quickly. You don't see this in a Star Trek episode. This is only in an old film noir where the gangster's in the corner, like, flipping a coin, and, you know, and Bogey walks in. You know, like, that's the thing, is that It's almost kind of like Frank Underwood, where he's like, I never make big decisions so long after sunset and so far before dawn. or something to that effect. And it's just like, nobody talks like that. But if you add a Southern accent, it works. Or if you make believe that you're in a film noir, it works.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely am getting the Frank Underwood angle, because I love House of Cards. Now, maybe if she had said it in a Southern accent, I would have gotten it.
Maybe it would have worked. And she was holding a mint julep.
There you go. I'll poison myself slowly.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I think she's great, but I completely understand why you wouldn't like her delivery, because in a normal Star Trek episode, it wouldn't really work.
No, and so I think maybe I should watch some more film noir and then understand that this kind of, like, sultry perspective she has was good, and she was actually doing what she was supposed to do, and I need to educate myself better, and it's not her fault.
Oh, no, I wouldn't go that far. But so it sounds like, even though we love TNG and we love Matter of Perspective, there was a few things that were kind of repetitive, stuff that felt like filler that we didn't need, and even though you didn't think Ex Post Facto was the greatest episode, what I'm getting from you is that you liked it more. Is that correct?
Agreed. Yep, that is exactly what I am saying. I think... Oh, you know what else is interesting about both of these episodes? Not much of a B-plot. These are all very focused episodes on this one mystery. You know, in Ex Post Facto, there is one scene in the beginning where the Doctor and Kes are talking. And that was not quite a B-plot, though, because it's just out there and it's continuing the Doctor's evolution to maybe come up with a name. But beyond that, like the other 40 minutes, 42 even, it's all about this mystery. Very interesting parallels there. And yet, yeah, I feel like Ex Post Facto does make better use of the time.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I remember watching A Matter of Perspective for the first time, and when they came up with the B-plot, you didn't know that it was connected right away. And the B-plots aren't always connected, but in a big portion they are. But I remember seeing that, thinking, I was like, really? I was like, do we need this right now? We don't need to add to the drama because the ship might explode from radiation. We can just have Riker trying, you know, to free himself from guilt. We can do that. We don't need this crap. But then as the tale went on, I was like, oh, it's totally interconnected. And I felt like a fool. And so I appreciated that. I appreciate that they brought it back to the main storyline. And in Ex Post Facto, they just didn't need it. Like, everything was tight enough that they didn't need it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but that said, I feel like these are both very average episodes of TNG and Voyager, respectively. And you can do a lot better. They might be worth watching once, just so you can say you watched them. And then after that, treat yourself to something better. Is that too far? I don't think so.
That's a little harsh, but, you know.
No, I feel like they both were trying to do good things here. It's just the execution maybe fell through a little bit. And I know for Ex Post Facto, stylistically anyway, it was all about budget. And maybe had they given it more of a film noir feel, they really could have polished it and made it into something unique. But it is what it is.
So, okay, well, there you have it. I mean, I guess there's not much more to say. I mean, both great red shirts and flyboys and ladies' men. Were accused of something that they did not accused of a crime that they did not commit, and thankfully the crew was there to bail them out.
That's right. Whether it was cold hard facts or good old fashioned science, something was there to save the day for them. But comparisons aren't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
A. Mugatu. B. Gorn. C. Tribble. Or D. Horta.
Isn't Mugatu from, like, Zoolander?
Here's the thing, right? Okay.
Earl Grey.
Oh, by the way, 6 hours in. If you press shift, you'll run throughout the whole game.
Press shift when your characters are moving, and they'll actually move at a
reasonable
pace.
The Orb.
If he had, like, a game card, his power, you know, like, would be higher than any other captain for their persuasion power.
You'll be like, damn, I was winning, and then he went and played a Cisco card on me.
The Ready Room.
Here's one more thing I want to throw out here for you guys. Recasting this episode, because I know you guys like to do this on To the Journey with things, with series and such. I think that Ma'ab should be played by Will Ferrell.
Yeah! To the journey!
There is that moment where badass Janeway plunges down with a phaser rifle in hand and takes command of the situation. And so there is that redeeming moment.
That is an awesome moment, but it always pissed me off because I'm like, why would you send the captain down first?
Right?
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Lost World's a terrible movie. I haven't seen Jurassic World, though.
The 602 Club.
We wake up in the middle of the night and I pop back in episode 5 and I watch it again. Like, there's something about this movie that from even then, you know, I'd seen them all, it's all clean slate. This one was already my favorite.
Literary Treks.
It definitely starts in a very dark place and it doesn't get much brighter at all, you know, until we get to the end and you know, there's some hope there, but yeah, definitely it's a dark book.
Women at Warp.
And then Tom's basically like, well, after we like infiltrate the fortress, we'll free Chaotica's harem. And no, like
it's going to turn out they're already being freed by Furiosa, and it's going to turn into a whole nother holodeck program.
Meta Trex.
I want Lieutenant Commander Einstein sitting at my conference table briefing.
Would that be
a
blue shirt?
He would totally be a blue shirt.
Just making sure.
And you know, even though the bushy mustache is technically not Starfleet regulation, I'd let him keep it.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. You can find them wherever you want to get your podcasts. If you want to really simplify your life, do the master feed. That is the way to get every single one of our Trek.fm podcasts. And you know what I'm going to say next. We want your help via iTunes. That is still the way most people get their podcasts. And so getting ratings and reviews there is absolutely paramount to us. Yes, that's right. I said paramount, not CBS. And guess what? We have been not begging people, but we have certainly been putting the word out saying we need some new reviews. And we have a lot of people to thank because we've been getting some reviews. So in the US iTunes store, we have 3 new people to thank. All gave us 5 stars and wrote us fantastic reviews. We have eTrevor82602, who has visions of what we look like, but doesn't want to know if they're accurate or not, so as not to ruin the vision, which I think is kind of interesting. Yes. Timothy Zader, who's working his way up from the very beginning. Way to go. And Silver Stag, who showered us with so many compliments, I don't even know what to say. When somebody tells you that they actually look forward to going to work just so they can listen to your podcast, wow, that is really saying something. So thank you all very much for your kind words, for supporting the show. We really do appreciate it. But we also need to thank Silent Pixie in the UK, who not only left us a review, but also let us know that there were a nice ample handful of other reviews waiting for us in the UK iTunes store. So I hope I'm not missing anybody, and if I am, please let me know. But I try to get everybody that has left a review in the since this year in the UK iTunes store. So we have Chris Shipley, Todd Sproul, Stephen D. Marsh, and Simon the Geek, for helping us spread the good word across the pond. And again, if I did forget you, please let me know, and I apologize in advance.
Yeah, and in general, when you leave us a review overseas, whether it's UK or Russia or wherever, Australia, let us know, and we'll mention you on the podcast because we don't have access to that stuff normally.
Well, we have to very deliberately go into those countries' iTunes stores, and it's kind of a pain, so we don't do it regularly. But if you let us know, we'll check it, and we'll do that.
Absolutely.
So one more thing before we go, we've got to mention Patreon, because Trek FM is a listener-supported network, and it's those of you who are listening and becoming patrons via Patreon to keep us going. And we would especially like to thank our associate producers, Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Aaron Harvey, and Bruce Lish. Thank you all very much for supporting TTJ especially, but also Trek FM at large. If you've not checked this out, go to patreon.com/trekfm. There's cool perks in it for you, so please consider becoming a subscriber. Now, we've compared 2 episodes. What are we going to do next week to top that?
Next week, we are doing an episode rewrite, and I love doing episode rewrites because it lets our own creative juices flow.
Yeah, let it flow.
What we're doing is Season 4, Episode 4, Nemesis, where Commander Chakotay is captured by the Vori when his shuttle is shot down during a scouting mission. They quickly decide he is not a threat to them and integrate him into their own team. They tell Chakotay of the Beast, quote-unquote.
The Beast, ooh.
The Beast. This was a horribly mediocre episode that had a lot of potential and thus is ripe for a rewrite, but you will have to tune in next week to find out. So, until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey! Oops.